in creative contexts, it's not only the educational or professional background that counts. It can be very valuable other kind of experiences that you have gathered through voluntary work or hobbies or other networks.
Aalto University Podcast.
This is Leading for Interdisciplinary Creativity, and I am your host, Irina Viippola. In this episode, we examine how IDBM connects with its ecosystem to amplify impact. We explore how to build team cultures that unlock creativity, the practical leadership moves that sustain it, and the communication habits that make collaboration more effective. From navigating the pitfalls of interdisciplinary teamwork to steering organizations toward a better future, this episode offers sharp insights you can apply. Let's hear the thoughts of two experienced creative leadership experts. Welcome, Tua Björklund and Satu Rekonen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Before we start our discussion, can you introduce yourself and tell a bit about your background, Tua? Maybe you can start.
So my name is Tua. I'm the director of the Design Factory. That's a multidisciplinary collaboration hub for product development, research and teaching and impact. I'm the teacher in charge of an industry project course product development project, which, like IDBM, is 30 years now. So long shared history across the years, even before Aalto was created there. So I lead the unit, but also do the teaching and research and kind of practical outreach there.
Okay. Thanks. And Satu?
Yes. So my name is Satu Rekonen. I'm currently a lecturer at the Department of Industry, Engineering and Management. I am actually IDBM alumni as well from the year 2012, if I remember correctly. I was also working as a researcher for years at Design Factory, where I maybe got more engaged in this, like facilitating creative collaboration in different industry projects and multidisciplinary projects, which is still one of my research interests today as well.
Okay, what kind of courses are you running at the moment?
Currently, I'm running a master's course on organizational renewal, and I'm also developing a bachelor course on design thinking in organizations. And then I'm doing a lot of this collaboration skills in various project courses.
Okay, sounds like core IDBM
studies. That's true. Yeah.
Okay, thanks. Now, Tua, you already mentioned that then IDBM and Design Factory have something in common, but at the moment, today, what is the connection between the two programs or instances?
So Design Factory, and I wear two hats. I'm also a professor in product development, so product development and Design Factory. Compared to IDBM, we're all multidisciplinary programs, so bringing together students from different backgrounds, but as well teaching teams from different backgrounds. So sharing a focus on interdisciplinary development. Where the differences come a bit is that Design Factory is focused on physical including elements in product development. So we don't do software or business model innovation only projects, whereas IDBM has really great courses in that. And then Design Factory is not only a teaching unit, our courses are actually embedded in a number of different units, so anyone in Aalto can take our courses. And then we focus on physical hands-on prototyping, so we have prototyping facilities, which IDBM then, for example, in the industry project, students often utilize those.
Okay, yeah. And is it so, this is now out of the question list, but just out of curiosity, do you think that there is enough emphasis on these multidisciplinary courses and programs within the Aalto context?
I think it's a very, kind of, how would I say, uneven distribution. Mm-hmm. So there are programs such as product development and IDBM where there is a very generous helping of interdisciplinary collaboration. But it is also possible to do Aalto studies with fairly little exposure. So I think both IDBM, as well as a lot of Satu's work, as well as Design Factory, are pushing for how can we actually benefit so that there's not just exposure to different disciplines, but so that you can benefit from those perspectives.
True, I agree. So if I think about our department, Industry, Engineering and Management, it's not so visible there, for example, but then at the Design Factory, most certainly. In different places, in different levels, I'd say.
So students can kind of opt in. So from whatever program you are in, you are able to pursue these interdisciplinary experiences, but it is possible to also kind of stay in your silo if you seek to do so. And maybe that's something that I think Design Factory and IDBM alike share a focus on. We think that whatever your disciplinary focus is, it would be good to have at least a dash of understanding, because of course when you graduate, the reality is that you're not going to be in a single discipline or a single functional group. You have to be able to collaborate with others.
Okay, to my first question, so getting there slowly. What do you think, how to foster a culture that promotes creativity in these teams and communities?
There's many routes for that. One of my favorite studies is about the co-evolvement around different practices and cultures. So Elsbach and Stigliani did this review study looking at, you can either start changing culture and then practices and artifacts and methods will change, or you can bring in new methods and practices and artifacts and that starts to change culture. And if I think from a practical point of view, I think it's often easier to start with those artifacts and methods and they start to shape the way that we actually perceive culture, because most of the organizations are geared towards more kind of perfecting execution and reliability in their culture, whereas creative culture requires that exploration, collaboration, and maybe some of these a tad less easy to measure facets. So often I think bringing those different practices and tools, they're baby steps, it's not yet a cultural change, but that makes it easier to start to think about it. As a practical example, it's very hard to be, for example, user-centered if you have no interactions with users. So it can be a value, but if you want to actually practice that, you would need to know what the users are thinking, you would need to meet them. So if you start doing, for example, user testing or user interviews, it's a lot easier to start being user-centered once you actually know what's going on.
That's a good example.
Exactly. I think also acknowledging that creativity is not something that only happens in like well-planned workshops or formal meetings, but it's actually something that can happen in these more fleeting moments in everyday interaction. And one of my favorite research is the one from Hargadon and Beggy, where they look at the like collective creativity and how it takes place in organizations. And actually, they found that there are certain like behavioral patterns that often precede this creative or collective insight or collective creativity, and it comes down to help-seeking and help-giving behaviors, which then foster this kind of reflective reframing of the problem. So someone providing a new perspective on a challenge at hand that you have, and then you can move forward with that one. So fostering the kind of, well, if we understand culture, like what is, how are things done here and what is valued here, then of course making it explicit that we value and we want to foster creativity, and that creativity lies in, for example, help seeking and help giving behaviors. And how do we then foster the kind of culture that does not think that help seeking is something that kind of communicates that you're ignorant or you're not professional not enough, but actually something that you are encouraged to do in order to get the best possible outcome with the complex challenges that you have at your table.
Okay, so this is like one strategy that then leaders can use to encourage a culture of creativity. But what are then the other kind of strategies that can be utilized here?
Well, if we look at, for example, design integrations, that's usually connected to kind of organizational goal of developing user-centered creative outcomes. There you have both the organizational level aspects, so kind of formal organizing actions such as what are the KPIs, what are the development projects and these formal structures. But then building on Satu's point on these micro behaviors that help seeking and help giving, study upon study highlights the legwork that, for example, designers do, or even product developers when you're pushing a new idea, that kind of championing, issue selling, looking at how do you get people excited, how do you get their input, whether it's bringing a colleague on board and getting their kind of unofficial, informal remarks to help you develop your idea further, or start to kind of lay the groundwork that you might be needed to change the way that you're doing things here. In order, for example, to adopt a new method at the company. So that kind of human-to-human layer on it, looking at what are the opportunities to actually showcase the value of new ways of working, showcase the progress that is made. So if we do, if we're able to get you on board, what did your input actually bring? Getting that collective excitement that things can happen, because often creativity does require challenging norms. It requires rethinking things. It requires putting a bit more extra effort. You can't just comply with creativity. You have to kind of be proactive about it. So that means we need to find ways to keep you engaged and get all the relevant stakeholders engaged, not just the kind of core developers.
And maybe building on that, if we consider where does creativity consist of, according to Amabile, it's about expertise, it's about the intrinsic and certain external motivational aspects. It's about creative thinking skills. So also consider, like, do we have those in place? Do we have people who have enough amount of expertise that they can actually recognize opportunities or innovative avenues regarding the challenge at hand? Are they capable thinking creatively, so considering their point of view from different angles and bearing uncertainty, and also recognizing that these creative thinking skills are not something that we are born with, but they can be taught and they can be supported by the organization as well. So are those resources in place? It's also one question.
Sounds good, and actually sounds quite logical as well. And I especially like this legwork. So that you really have to do work in order to be to get these creative solutions out there. Okay, now to the next question. What are the fundamental elements of effective communication in a team setting? Satu, you are maybe the more expert on this. What are your thoughts on this?
I think I have several thoughts, so I think where to start. But first of all, it's that certain practices needs to be in place. So really starting from really like, why are we a team? What are we trying to achieve? And then considering like, how do we establish the certain kind of behavior norms or culture that we wish that will then cherish this effective communication or creative collaboration. And what I have noticed during the years of facilitating and coaching interdisciplinary teams is that the teams often feel a bit rushed at the beginning to really fast proceed with the tangible deadlines or outcomes of the project. So really taking the time to create the team practices and getting to know the backgrounds and expertise of different disciplines and members in the team, and remembering that in creative context, it's not only the educational or professional background that counts. It can be very valuable other kind of experiences that you have gathered through voluntary work or hobbies or other networks. So the better you know the skills and knowledge, the better you have awareness of that at the beginning of the team, the better you are also able to kind of create the open communication culture and also utilize the diverse skills throughout the course. And then also recognizing that in creative work there are maybe two different type, well, there are definitely different types of like phases, but maybe two main modes, so the divergent mode and convergent mode. So the divergent, when we are still in the phase of considering what all is possible and generating options, not time for critical evaluation or not so much time for analytical thinking. But then the convergent phase is more about that. And these both phases, they really require each member to rationalize their point of view. Why do I consider this option to be more valuable for us? And also they are, each discipline is responsible for bringing their own skills to the table, because others do not know that if they're coming from other disciplines. So recognizing at which phase of the creative process are we at, also maybe considering which is my stronger phase. Am I more into creating or analyzing or being more in the analytical phase? And then kind of forcing yourself into the right mode of communicating and like a way of working regarding the face as well.
Mm. And I think something that can help in this on a practical level is also signposting. So for example, in courses we teach the convergent and divergent phases. Are we creating choices or are we making choices? Mm. And something that we, for example, typically verbalize for students that in between these, there is a grown zone where, you know, it's not clear, are we now converging or diverging? Maybe I'm still diverging, but you're already converging. Yep. And being able to have that kind of vocabulary that you in a team can discuss, where are we, becomes perhaps a bit more important in this interdisciplinary collaboration where there's less shared kind of discipline-wide norms of this is how we always do projects. Mm. But on the other hand, I would say that even in kind of single discipline projects, in the creativity or innovation context, all projects are unique. So you need that kind of reference to have a conversation of where are we. Then you can disagree and have a heated and productive debate on where you are, but having that kind of terminology to talk about where are we so that we can kind of come to a shared conclusion on what are we trying to do right now.
And maybe also being aware at the beginning that in interdisciplinary settings, there's the starting point is information asymmetry. So there's like distinct unshared information and knowledge among the team members. And people are not always aware of that. The others are not aware of the same issues that I am. It can show in how we are referring to the vocabulary we are using or how we are referring to certain things, but being aware of that and research shows that teams have a tendency to keep discussing among things that everybody can attend to and everybody can kind of
Shared ground.
Shared ground. And then maybe having even that this somehow visually in your mind, that how can we then try to widen the space where we can actually bring in the kind of the knowledge that is distinct within the team so that we can pool it and then build on that as a team. Mm.
And another point in communication that I would highlight is that there's this kind of beginning phase of trying to understand where we are and kind of making sense where we are in the project. But then something that we run in time and time again, doesn't matter if you're a student or if you're a development professional, but in organizations, it's difficult to fit iteration because you would so happily get kind of stuck with that first solution or first idea or first pilot. How are you actually able to kind of have that expectation already and as a norm that the first workable thing is not going to be the thing that you'll continue exploring, you're going to be continuing iteration. And you also did a very nice study on this.
Yeah, it was actually very interesting. An organization that was not familiar with this creative process or iterative experimentation, and the main outcome was the huge amount of frustration that this iteration required. So there needed to be a very strong facilitation. It was an action research approach, so facilitation from the researcher's side so that they actually admitted to go on iterating their ideas. Then reflecting on it, later on they realized the value, but it felt nonsense at the time that they were required to do that.
Yeah, as a first timer, it's really difficult to kind of emotionally grapple that we're not done yet, we're only kind of halfway there. Now we have first results, but you're supposed to learn your way forward and not just stick with that.
Mm. Yeah, and it takes time as well, so that's of course time and resources. Yes. And then if the companies are not ready to invest or the organizations are not ready to invest that time and maybe even money for the iteration process.
True. And also I think we humans bear uncertainty at different levels. So that's also one thing that comes down to this teamwork. So it's good to know that some are more comfortable with it than the others. And it may actually have impact on the dynamics as well, because it may bring forth the urgency to close down on ideas prematurely.
Yeah. And similarly, some people might be kind of okay with outcome uncertainty, but require a certain process or vice versa. So there's, in addition to the degree of uncertainty, what's okay to be kind of up in the air and what do you need to lock?
And of course, iteration is always challenging because then you need to develop further and further and further. And of course, for some people, it might even be challenging to do the ideation or the brainstorming or developing on others' ideas.
Absolutely. Skills that need to be taught and learned
Yes, yes. So Satu, you mentioned I wish tool. How does that work?
Mm. Maybe a bit about the background, where it all began. It was when I was collecting data for my PhD. I was interviewing students taking part in these interdisciplinary project courses. And in those interviews, what came really strongly through was this kind of need for this kind of reflection or feedback discussion within the team, that how do others see my role as a team member? What are the kind of value that I'm providing? Or is there something that I could provide even more to the project at hand? So they were kind of reflecting on this with me in the interview, but they did not have this discussion within their project teams. So that's where the idea for kind of creating this kind of tool that then gently forces the teams around this I wish discussion, which is a feedback discussion where each team member provides both the strengthening positive feedback and then the constructive feedback on an individual and team level. So that is basically the main idea there. Mm-hmm. And they have been really insightful for many students. So they have really realized certain learned things from themselves that they had not known before.
So then they tell that what they have liked about the collaboration, and then what they wish that could.
Yeah. Or I wish that you would be more active when we meet, or bring more actively your ideas to the table.
So it's quite concrete tool and easy to use.
Yes. Exactly.
Yeah. And this is something that in the product development project course that we do, it has multidisciplinary teams working together on industry projects, so similar to the IDBM challenge, or industry projects, sorry. That's something that we do roughly midpoint in the course, so a few weeks back. All the teams had a team level specific session. There's an external facilitator who kind of helps to make sure that everyone has an opportunity to get heard. What that helps is that you get recognition for the things that you are already doing. Like, you might not realize that others value this. So time and time again, we hear that the students really appreciate that. Yes, you hear what you could improve, but also you get kind of validation for the things that you are doing well. And especially in creative projects where different phases have different needs, I think this kind of feedback helps you to adapt during it. So you're not only providing feedback on the project content, but also looking at how those roles are. Of course, it's important to also just give positive feedback and constructive feedback on the go. But I would almost say that the I wish is like a almost like a retrospective, but it's in the kind of when in the project you can still do things about it, and focusing particularly or zooming in on that collaboration. So you have other sessions looking at the project content, but then actually taking that time and talking about the collaboration so pays off in actually finding a way that the collaboration goes smoothly forward.
Mm. Yeah.
Sounds really good. I've been working in the industry for many, many years, and I have to say that even though that I've been working in this project-based way, these kind of reflective sessions have been totally missing. Like this, I don't even remember one time. Of course, afterwards, yes, but not during the actual process.
Positive comment from your boss, or you might have a 360 degree performance review later on, but in the project, often it's left to kind of maybe for the manager, project manager to comment on it, but there's rarely this kind of systematic taking the time to reflect, and that helps to get so much more out of the project.
Then you have experience on all these different kind of courses and students and projects within the interdisciplinary teamwork. In your point of view, what are the main challenges in this kind of interdisciplinary teams?
Different levels of challenges. I would say that on a very concrete level, doesn't matter if it's a student project or a real development project, time is always an issue. Finding time to come together, whether it's students across different courses or in an organization when you have cross-functional or cross-unit collaboration, how do we create that time and space? that we're able to come together and not just physically come together, but actually create that kind of mental space that we're able to share effectively. A lot of the pitfalls come into either not finding the time to come physically together or not finding the right motivation, right atmosphere, right culture to effectively collaborate when we do come together. That's one key pitfall. Maybe you want to share another, and then I can.
Maybe related to that is also how do we come together? Are we mindfully engaging or are we just co-located? So something that's really challenged at today, I think, in this online world that we are living in. So there's somewhat I think very interesting research on co-presence. So how do we are mindfully present and how we are mindfully available for the task at hand with the people who are present. And previously I was referring to this fleeting moments where this creative collaboration can have a happen in these informal interactions. And one enabler is exactly the mindful engagement in that moment that you are actually there available for the person who is seeking for help and you are then mindfully providing that help. Mm. Pinpointing one more challenge regarding the team is decision making. So when we are coming from different backgrounds, it takes more time usually to make decisions because we need to understand the viewpoints of others. So one challenge is that there might be persons who hold on too tightly on their decisions or ideas and are not able to let go. So I think whatever context teamwork, I think it's very important to recognize that when you are part of a team, then the team kind of benefit of the team always goes in front of like individual preferences. So that's one thing that you need to learn to let go of your own desires in that sense. And then another one is the possibility to draw into this kind of like group thinking. So conceptualized by Irvin Janis. So that means that team is looking for harmony or conformity and then come up with irrational decisions, for example. So they do not dare to bring forth these diverse or contradicting viewpoints, for example. And that might be
that's where really the value of interdisciplinary teams come for it, or interfunctional teams that unique learning. So if you just focus on that shared element, then you're kind of losing the potential that the team would have.
Yeah. So the task-related conflict is quite important, actually, in interdisciplinary teamwork. But when it gets to personal-related, that's when people tend to defend themselves or withdraw from the collaboration, and it kind of gets the focus away from the real issue.
And is it then better for the teams to make the decisions within the team and not that it's given from above, for example? Or what's the decision-making process that actually then enhances the results?
I think always better if it's within the team, but if they are not able to do it, then somebody has to help them in that. But there are many, many methods also.
Yeah, and I would also highlight that it's more about being mindful of how the decisions are being made. It's really rare that you would have a team that makes all decisions democratically. Usually you will have a team where, I don't know, the project manager makes some decisions, the upper management makes some decisions, or in a course context, the teachers make some decisions, the sponsors make some decisions. So it's more about being mindful of which decisions, which kind of decision is this and what's our mechanism for doing it. If we would do development so that it's only consensus, I don't think that would be a very effective way of doing it. So thinking about where do we want what kind of input from whom and what are we okay with? Because again, there are different team expectations. Maybe someone sees discussing everything as overloading, and someone would see not discussing it as exclusion. So again, being clear about what that process is and why it is, how it is. Mm. Ideally, I would say that teams would design the processes and options themselves, not necessarily make all the decisions themselves.
Mm. Maybe
or collaboratively.
Important thing is that there's a feeling that I have been heard, that I have had the chance to bring forth my viewpoint that, okay, maybe that was not the decision we went on with, but anyway, I had the possibility.
Yeah, and I have to say, as a manager, one of my pet peeves is this misleading involvement. Don't involve or participate people when they're not actually heard. Like, that's the worst thing. If you ask for opinions and don't listen to them, that's, in my opinion, even worse than not asking from them and giving a rationale, of course, on why you would not ask.
Yeah.
But but you want to make sure that you didn't discuss it just for the sake of discussion. Mm. Like, if you are asking for opinions, then show how was the decision made based on that. Was this, like, did we vote? Did I now as a manager weigh these different options, or did someone else kind of say that, okay, now we need to do this, and then I sell it to my staff that, okay, we need to do this because of reasons X, Y, Z.
Or underline that there's autonomy in developing ideas, and then you micromanage everything. So it's also kind of the
question. Yeah, and also in reality, there's very few things that we could purely control and very few things that we could not influence at all. So if you get a decision made above, there's still usually a lot that you can decide as a team and how you execute it, when you execute it, what exactly is it. The same in within the team. Like, some things are maybe a sub-team made a decision on a specific solution, but then it comes together in the kind of team level collaboration. So thinking about what those are and kind of being honest about what is happening. I think a successful collaboration is a lot about managing expectations.
And then, of course, there are cultural differences in this decision-making process and different kind of expectations. You work in a very multicultural setting. Is that then, is that a challenge, or is it then more a positive issue?
I would say it's definitely a strength, but then it does require, because it's similar to different disciplines, of course, when you add not only different functions and disciplines, but different cultures, of course, that's more diversity, and more diverse perspectives means that you have more lived experience to draw from. Awesome. But then again, it does mean that the need to find a shared understanding and find a common vocabulary and so on is heightened. But still, I think, again, it's a positive thing to have that, but then you can't kind of, sometimes you almost get this misconception that it's enough to gather diverse people together and then somehow the magic will automatically happen. But rather, like, if the more diverse people you have, the more effort you have to actually put into finding a way to make that work. One thing that we actually haven't talked about yet that I think draws both the kind of culture and communication and this diversity together is that in my experience is having different kind of prototypes or boundary objects, shared artifacts makes it so much easier. It's almost like a third language. So whether we're talking about design factory strategy or a student team talking about a specific product development project, having something tangible that we're working on, whether it's a Miro board with post-its and process notes, or a paper prototype, or a 3D printed something, having that object, I think, gives a kind of external point of reference. It gives a new language. It also means that we can talk about the object rather than Satu's viewpoint, my viewpoint, because that's Satu versus me. But when we're talking about this shared object, then it's kind of us against the object almost. It helps to somehow make it less about me as an individual. I've noticed this especially when we have large hierarchical differences. So, you know, if it's the unit director and intern in the same group, you want to make sure that there are these kind of how would I say, leveling the playing field type of artifacts. Same if you have 9 engineers and 1 industrial designer. Like, having that shared object makes it perhaps a bit easier to have a balanced conversation versus this us versus them.
Yeah, it neutralizes it.
Yeah. Yeah.
We could change into a little bit different kind of subject. Now, you are educators and you're working with people who are highly creative in many different ways. And at the Aalto level, we promise that we are actually educating future change makers. That's a kind of very ambitious. But how do we do that?
Yeah, I would say, of course, the answer is super long and super varied.
Yes.
But one thing that I would highlight is that what are we actually trying to educate? I've been working together with one of my colleagues, Ulri Risku from ELEC, thinking about how traditionally universities look at reflection and the expertise skills, yes, that's absolutely needed. But I think the game-changing focus is on what I would say kind of shaping skills. So looking at, are you able to take initiative, be proactive? Are you able to collaborate effectively and actually making that change? So kind of, yes, you need the skills to kind of diagnose what kind of changes would be beneficial, have that expertise in there. But I think one of the kind of special ingredients that I think Aalto Education highlights is that impact bit. So how do you effectively make a change, not just kind of theorize it or formulate it? Universities around the world focus on that. But I think we combine that kind of diagnosis and reflection type of theorizing with actually looking at what are the opportunities and how do you take that step. And especially in project-based courses, taking that step while you're studying. So impact isn't something that you do after you graduated, but already during your studies. When you learn, how does it actually benefit the society around you, whether it's working on sustainability projects or industry challenges, practicing that change also during the studies, not just after in some kind of magical future where you've graduated as a fully formed human being.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So fully supporting what you said. So definitely having the deep expertise in some area. But then realizing also that the expertise is not only like deep knowledge, but it's also how you collaborate and utilize that knowledge with other experts. So that's definitely how you can facilitate the kind of usefulness of the expertise that you have learned.
Mm. And maybe this requires also the legwork.
Yeah, so I have a very nerdy analog where you kind of, I would say the expertise is that kind of, that's the processor, like whatever machine you have, but then you have the user interface, which actually determines how much of that kind of processing power do you get. So then that collaboration skills and interaction skills, legwork skills are the user interface to the wonderful expertise and deep thoughts and reflection and whatnot you possess.
Yes. And how do we then support the change towards a better future? So we are now educating these change makers, but then what is the kind of the direction where we want to guide them?
To me, it's a lot about empowering the students. Yes, we want to provide the skills to diagnose and analyze and kind of identify opportunities. But I think it would be a bit kind of ivory tower-ish for us to say that we know what that change would be. Like, no one knows. If we knew, that it would be easy, all the worlds of the problems of the world would be solved. So I think it's more about having these critical thinking skills and the kind of impact skills, and how when you have an idea, how do you take it forward? So more giving the tools and mindsets and frameworks and theories that help you to advance in the world, even though we don't yet know what kind of solutions are needed. We can teach frameworks and help you in that pathway, but that's where the kind of need for these interdisciplinary teams comes, because we don't yet know what the solution is. So we want to kind of equip students so that they're able to work in these kind of teams, that they can use their disciplinary lenses to spot opportunities, help develop solutions, but we just don't know yet what those solutions would be.
Mm-hmm. Maybe one thing also is to kind of collaborate already during the studies with public organizations, so not only with business organizations, and also then highlighting the importance of these more like wider societal problems. So utilizing the skills that we learned here to tackle those problems that, for example, relate to loneliness of elderly people or whatever, or the environmental issues or so forth. So somehow maybe incorporating those more explicitly also in the courses.
Yeah, and I would say it doesn't matter if you're working on a public organization case or if you're working on a kind of industrial technology case. Nowadays, you have to think about sustainability in any case. So our students do need to be able to think about not just environmental, but social, economic, and so on. Diverse responsibility and sustainability, where there are some disciplinary specific information that we can already equip the students with. But then it is, again, learning how to learn when you are engaging in this whether it's creative collaboration or just the fields progressing, being able to kind of update yourself so that you're not stuck with the education that you got, for example, 20 years ago. I think the key role of education is to give you a good boost and give you the tools to be able to kind of keep updating, give those foundational frameworks, but then basically in no profession would you be able to just kind of execute for the next few decades. You would be able to have to, regardless of whether you're working in R&D or just execution, fields are changing. And if we want to have a sustainable impact, shape the world for a better direction, being able to keep up with the developments that are being made. Hmm.
This is really interesting, and I think that then it's also to do with ethics and moral, and maybe we should be teaching our students more philosophy and reflection and thinking. But of course, then it's about choosing what kind of skills they need. But
one thing that I would highlight here is that what we can teach is actually making these assumptions visible. And how do you discuss these? So we might not be able to provide all the answers on what is more sustainable. These are complex issues, or what is the right ethical consideration in a future scenario where we don't know the variables. But if you realize that there's a need to discuss this, and you realize what are effective ways of discussing it with your team, that makes it so much more likely that you don't accidentally end up making decisions that have implications, but rather they're mindful choices. You're always going to have trade-offs, but being able to have an informed discussion so that you can make a mindful or informed decision rather than, whoops, I noticed that this now had these unintended side effects. So building that into the creative process.
Coming back to the philosophy point of view, there's a course called Philosophy and AI, if I remember correctly, a new course studying in our department. I think it's super interesting. I'm thinking about attending it myself as well.
That's a good, nice thing about university jobs, yes. That kind of we are paid to learn more. Yeah. And there's a lot of low threshold opportunities to learn from various experts. Mm. And that also makes it so much interesting. So I think we talk a lot about the benefits of interdisciplinary collaboration for the project or the outcome, but honestly, from an individual trajectory also, even from my personal experience, when I'm co-teaching with others or doing research together with others, it's so much more interesting when you learn from those more diverse perspectives than just kind of focusing in your own area. So I think just from a personal motivation and kind of career meaningfulness perspective, that collaboration has huge benefits.
Yeah, definitely. We are now coming to the end of the discussion here, but I have two questions for you. And Tua, I have this question for you. Now, if you could grant every team one superpower, what would it be?
I would want to grant them 10 things, but if I had to pick one, I would take initiative. And that's honestly also as a manager. Good. If I had to hire for one single thing, I would have initiative or proactiveness. Doesn't matter how you call them. Because I think everything else you can compensate for. If you do stuff and take the initiative to suggest something, then you'll get feedback. You'll have results. You can always iterate. But it's really hard if you don't take that first step. So like if everyone in the team takes initiative, voices up issues. I noticed something isn't work. Should we do this? Or like, hey, Sato, I noticed you were really quiet today. Is something bothering you? So I think that kind of initiative translates across different areas, whether it's the interpersonal relationship side or the project work. If everyone takes initiative, proactively kind of does that, you will sidestep a lot of the pitfalls and you'll see that kind of potential challenges earlier when it's easier to address them.
Good. Now, Satu, question for you. One piece of advice you'd leave with tomorrow's change makers, what would it be?
It would be a bit related to you. Ask questions and show interest, because I think that's something you reach out, you show interest, ask questions, you learn, and you can move forward so much easier than just staying with your own mind and thoughts.
Not rocket science in the end, but they are so impactful, little things that make all the difference.
Yeah.
This is good place to end our discussion. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
It was really, really fruitful.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you for listening. I am your host, Irina Viippola. This episode was edited by me and Aditya Parek and produced by the IDBM program at Aalto University.
I think her mic stopped working.
Okay. Lovely.
Oh my God.
Has it been like all the time?
No.
Just wait. Yeah.
Is it, am I?
What? No, I think it's maybe.
I think it's probably the mic. The thing is, the mic which we had booked, they didn't have it, so they had to give a replacement. I don't think it's
not working.
No, it just stopped transmitting.